You know, one of the buzzwords that I've been seeing a lot lately, one of the things as I've lived my life in the recent years anyways, is this word called authenticity. People want things to be authentic. We want things to be real. I used to have a job at an agency where I was supposed to recruit people to our vision, recruit people to our mission. And this job would take me to a lot of places, like schools, colleges, universities, churches, or big events, where, like career events, where I would get the opportunity to sit with people who are about to get into the workforce, or some people who have already been there for a while. And a lot of our conversations that we would have was what, and I'd ask them, what do you want out of life? Like, what's the dream? You know, what do you see yourself in 5, 10 years? You know, and for a lot of them, they didn't know the answer. Now, some did. And I was always jealous of these people because I never knew what I wanted to do in life. Sometimes I still don't know what I want to do. These guys would have like everything mapped up. You know, I'm gonna finish college in 3 years and I'm gonna be a doctor. I was like, that's impressive, 3 years. But I'm gonna be a doctor. I'm gonna be the best doctor in the world. You know, I know what I'm gonna do. And that was some people. But the majority of people, they didn't really know exactly what they wanted to do. But what they did know was that they wanted to be part of something real. You know, they said, I want to make a real difference. I want to be authentic. I want to live an authentic life. I want the real life. So many times people have said, Joe, I want the real life. You know, and this has been our world lately. We have been obsessed almost with wanting things that are real. You know, you turn on the TV, and one of the biggest growing genres of TVs are reality TV. Right? Oh, I want to see Survivor. I want to see Big Brother or Desperate Housewives. No. Real Housewives of Jersey or something. I don't know. Right? I want to see real. It's not enough for us that we see actors acting sad. Why do we want that? We want to see real people having real sadness. You know? We want to see real joy, real pain. We want to see the highs, but man, we want to see the lows. We want to see people get into fights and get angry, right? We want real. We want reality. And so much this actually influences our lives. You know, I could say a fact and you guys would be like, I don't know, is that real? Right? We're so worried about the information we get. We're so paranoid that what we're getting is just false information. We don't believe anything anymore. We don't know if it's real. We demand authenticity. And you know what? That's not a bad thing, is it? I mean, why wouldn't we want what's real? Maybe it's Macca's, all right? But why wouldn't we want something that's real? The problem comes, actually, when we are asked to be real ourselves, right? The problem comes when somebody asks for us to be authentic, you know? Because when that happens, all of a sudden, uh-oh. No, I mean, okay, sure, I will show you some real joy. Come to my wedding, come celebrate with me. Real sadness, sure, real pain. But when it comes to those things in our lives that we struggle with, the things in our lives that cripple us with shame and guilt, when it comes to those things, we put it in a box, down deep, we close it, we lock it up, we don't like to think of it ourselves, and there is no way in the world we are gonna share that dirt, that stuff. We are never gonna share that to the world. Why? Why is it that on one hand we demand real, we demand authenticity, why is that? But on the other side, we are so afraid to be authentic. Well, it's fear, isn't it? We are afraid of what someone might do or think if they realized, uh-oh, I am a bad person. I'm a bad person. So no, that's too scary. I'm not gonna be authentic. Instead, we buy into this religion, I'm gonna call it social perfectionism, right? Now, that might look different to every one of us, but what it means is that we try as hard as we can to look good to the public. What I wear, how I dress, I look in the mirror, oh, everything's got to be good. What I put on my social media, it's got to be only the best and only the smiling faces. Ah, living the right life, yeah. It's got to be the best. Who I talk to, what I talk about, who even who I hang out with. It's got to show that I am a good person. But the whole time that we do that, we know deep inside it's a hypocrisy, right? Look, I'm flawed, right? It's real. This is real, right? We're hypocrites, and we fear that, right? And this thing, the problem is we don't know what to do with that junk inside. We don't know what to do with the shame. We don't know where to go to get that guilt out of us. And so this whole time, we're playing this weird game of, oh, gotta be perfect, and inside I'm dying. And inside I hate myself. And inside I'm depressed. That's come to our church too, right? The problem is that religion reaches inside our church walls. And we who claim to have the truth, who claim to have the answers to that problem, we ourselves don't really believe it. And so we come to church and we say the right things. We smile and wave. And we sing the songs. Why are we singing those songs? I don't know. I put my hand in my pocket. Oh, gotta raise my hand. Everybody else is doing that. But why are we singing? I don't know. But we're gonna do it. We gotta look good, right? When we get into our small groups, our growth groups, and it's time to pray and time to share things that are going on in our lives. maybe I'll say like a little sin, an acceptable sin. Yeah, I lied the other day. But deep down, inside, this thing is festering. This sin, this guilt is festering, and we just don't know how to give it up, and we're just so afraid. And because of that, the view we give to the world is that we are hypocrites as Christians. The view we give to the world about God is that God is somebody who only demands perfection from us and does not, and it's true to us, a point, but that he won't even accept us as we are. He won't bring us in. He won't talk to us. He won't look at us. We have to be perfect to come to God. He just judges us and he just hates us. And that's the view of God that we project. That's what we give. We got to stop that. What do we do? Well, tonight is some serious good news, I hope. Because if that's you, if that sums you up, if you're feeling that way, the good news is tonight Jesus is saying, stop pretending to be perfect. You can put it up, Stu. Stop pretending to be perfect. God knows who you are. He knows who you are. He knows what you've done. And he still chooses to love you. So you don't have to be afraid. What do I mean? Well, let's dig into the passage and we will see this. So verse 12, if you want to put it up there, verse 12. While Jesus was in one of these cities, there came a man full of leprosy. Now, we're introduced to this guy who has leprosy. Now, when I say that, I'm aware that a lot of us are like, what? Leper what? Leprosy? You know, we might vaguely know what it is. We might vaguely understand it's a skin disease. But because nowadays, this is very rare and we have cures for it, we don't understand the weight of what this means, the weight of what's going on in the story. See, if you had leprosy, this was a fate almost worse than death. Let me tell you why. See, leprosy is a skin disease, you're right. And it almost rots your skin. Your skin decays, these big white patches go all over your skin. But worse than that, it actually attacks your nerves, your nervous system, right? And it kills them so that you can't feel pain. And I don't mean that in a good way. I mean that as if you're walking down the street and you hit a sharp rock or you step on some glass, you wouldn't feel that it had cut you. You couldn't feel it. And so what might have been a minor injury turns out to be this really horrendous, bad injury, so you're bleeding out. Or if you had fallen asleep by a fire, you might have rolled over. And the fire might be burning your skin, and you wouldn't feel that it's burning. So you live in this constant state of worry. You're worried that you are going to hurt. See, the thing about leprosy is it's not really that leprosy kills you. It's the damage caused to your body that actually kills you. And so you walk around nervous and worried about what might happen to you. But secondly, it gets worse than that. Leprosy was so contagious that you weren't allowed to be near anyone. You couldn't be near your friends. You couldn't be near your family. You couldn't be near anyone unless they, of course, had leprosy. Can you imagine that? They would have to quarantine you. They'd have to kick you out of your city. Can you imagine being a dad, right? And not being able to see your kids or your wife anymore. Or can you imagine being a mom or a wife or just friends? Can you imagine not being able to see the people you love anymore? You couldn't be around them because you just heard them. And if you were lucky, if they loved you enough, they might pick like a spot out there and they say, you know what, I'm going to put some food here and then you come a little bit later so you can eat. They might care for you that way, but you could only see your kids grow up from a distance. And at first that really hurt you, but then as it goes on, as you become more and more disfigured, more and more disgusting, you realize, I don't even want my friends or family to look at me because it's shameful. For the shame, it gets worse than that. See, it wasn't that you just couldn't be near people. You know, leprosy had this stigma. It was associated with sin. So if you had leprosy, anytime somebody came near you, or if you had to go through some people for whatever reason, you had to yell at the top of your lungs, unclean, unclean, I am unclean. And everybody would obviously look at who's screaming this. And on their faces, you would see judgment because they would think, you are a sinner. I didn't point to anyone. You're a sinner, right? You're a sinner. You deserved leprosy. And so you feel judged. Do you see what's going on? Do you see the picture this is creating? Does this not sound so much like us? The only difference, listen, he's worried all the time that somebody might, or that he might get hurt. He's worried. He's shamed. He's feeling judged. He's rejected and he's alone. Isn't that not the embodiment of our fears? Isn't that what we fear? That if we were to open up like this guy, because he couldn't hide it, we hide all of our gross, right? If we were to open up, don't we fear we would be like this guy? And I know what you're thinking. You're like, yes, yes, I do. Yes, Joe, I agree with you. I do not want that. No, I don't. I don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be guilted. So there's no way in the world I am going to open. Why are you even telling me this, Joe? Well, you're right. I don't want to tell you this because of people. You're right. I get it. People are the worst. People are going to do that. But the point of today's lesson isn't that you go and give your filth out to people because people don't know what to do with it. We're all in that boat. What I want to show you is what happens when this guy, in all of that, sees Jesus. I want to show you what Jesus does when he does what we are afraid to do. Look here. It's verse 12. Right? While he was in one of the cities, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. When he saw Jesus. Now, I have no idea how this guy heard about Jesus. I wasn't there. All right? But I can assume, maybe like last week when Dan was talking about, Jesus had been going from city to city proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. You remember last time, he was like, Jesus was opening the eyes of the blind to see, right? He was opening their eyes so they could see the truth of the world. He wanted to set captives free, right? He wanted us to understand that we could be accepted. So maybe he heard, oh, there's some good news, Jesus. And a little bit of hope flickered where there was once just no hope at all. A little bit. Or maybe he was friend with, a blind guy. Maybe Jim, right? And Jim met Jesus, and he was one of the guys that Jesus actually healed. And maybe like, whoa, this is real. And so that flame of hope grew a little more. And you can almost see this as he's like wrestling, right? Because it was against, he was making a big risk here. You don't just go into people. you're a leper. That's a lot of risk. There's a lot of hurt. That's not something you desire to do. And you can see almost this wrestle, right? Because maybe on the other hand, as you see what he's saying, Lord, if you will, when he does get to Jesus, when he does fight it and say, you know what, forget it, there's my hope. When he does fight it, look at what he's actually saying. Look at it right there. Verse 12, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. If you will. See, for this guy, it wasn't a matter of could Jesus heal me. Clearly, you can make me clean. But there is this hope, there's this worry nagging in the back of his head. Maybe he won't. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm too disgusting. Oh, I know he healed Jim, but Jim was just blind. I'm a leper. I'm way worse than Jim. How often do we say that about our sin? How often do we try to compare how often do we try to compare ourselves to the rest of the world, thinking, "Oh, I'm not as good as you." Yeah, Jesus did it for you, but you're better. I've gone too far. But look at what Jesus says. Verse 13. And Jesus looked at him and was disgusted and walked away. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong translation. No. Let me try again. And Jesus looked at him and said, seriously? Get your life in order, then come back to me. No, that's what we think he says. One more time. Jesus looked at him and said, okay, I guess. Yeah, I guess you asked so nicely. But you know what? I'm going to do this for you once, and then go over there and don't mess up again. You're on your own after that. No. Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will. I want, I will heal you. Be clean. Jesus, just in this moment, just think about this. Jesus did something that nobody dared ever do. He touched the untouchable. He broke into this guy's messy life. He jumped in there. And he touched him. Why would he do that? Love. Man, I can't even imagine what that would have felt to be touched by someone, to feel the love of someone. Listen, I told you we're going to get authentic here. I've been in not that situation, but man, I can sort of understand this. You know, not too long ago, I got into a fight with my wife. Not fist fight, but we got into an argument, right? And I was so angry at her. I don't even know what it was. You know how they always just happen. I was so angry at her. And I said some seriously hurtful words, and I meant to hurt her. You know, when you're there and you're just like, I'm gonna show you. And I cut her, and I cut her deeply with my words. And immediately, shame. See, what happened was all that sin that even I tried to hide inside, whoop, came out. Floated. I couldn't even keep it in if I tried. And it hurt her. And in that moment, you know what I wanted most of all? I wanted her to hug me and say, I forgive you. I wanted to apologize, and I wanted her to hug me and say, I love you. You guys ever have those moments when you have done something wrong and you do gotta confess it, and it's hard? This is real, man. It is hard, but you're like, I gotta do it. And you're just at the mercy of the person you sinned against. You're at the mercy of the person you hurt. But at that moment when they said, it's okay, I love you, what relief. What a feeling. This Jesus touched this guy. You can imagine that leprosy. gone. What a feeling that has got to be. Man, this is the love of Jesus. That's how, can you imagine? That's Jesus. That's what he can do for us. And I know you're saying, what do you mean do for us? I don't have leprosy. I don't see Jesus. Well, no. You might even be saying, listen, I get it. Okay, so Jesus could heal people. I get that. But Joe, I've sinned. Joe, like this guy might not even been his fault that he got leprosy. I deserved what I've done. I know I'm sinful. What's Jesus gonna do? You're right in a few ways. In one sense, you're right. Jesus, with the leper, he only healed them. And I say only, like that's amazing, right? But what Jesus is offering for us and what he's done for us is so much bigger than that. It's so much more amazing than that. Look at verse 14, right? And he charged him not to tell, to tell no one. Why would he do that? Right? Why would Jesus, after doing this miraculous, amazing thing, then tell him to go and tell nobody but only the priest? Why would he say that? Well, like I said, Jesus has something bigger in store. He wasn't coming just to make our lives better, just to heal physically people. No, because as we know, there's some serious dirt going on inside of us. There's some serious filth in there. And Jesus says, that is what I've come to deal with. That sin. You know, on one sense, we are right to fear judgment. On one sense, we are right to fear that we are not worthy, because we aren't. We have sinned, just like I sinned against Victoria. It hurts. We have hurt God. And he has every right to tell us no. He has every right to say, I reject you. I don't love you. Get out of here. He has every right. But he doesn't. Hear that. But he doesn't. No, no. What Jesus did was he came down to live in our world. He came down to live in our filth, to take on that. And he knew at this point that he was going to go and die for us. That's how much. See, it was never about how disgusting I am. It was always about how far would Jesus go? How willing, how far would he go to love me? And he said, I was going to go to the end. Jesus said, I will go to the end. I will die for you. And so Jesus on the cross did something amazing. See, this is where he taught. This is the big hug from Jesus. The Bible says that Jesus, he who knew no sin, here was beautiful. He was perfect. He who knew no sin decided to take on our sin. Became sin. So that we could be children of God. You see what's going on? It's a swap. That's the offer. What do you mean? What do I do? What do I do? What do? If you put up this slide here, Steve, what do? The next one. You stop pretending to be perfect. Sure. You come as you are to the cross. You take all that filth with you. You come and you see the love of Jesus and you put it at the foot of the cross and say, Jesus, take this. And you let yourself be washed by his love. Take this. Here's the answer. Here's how we deal with this. Here's how we get the authentic life. Authentic Christian life. You want authentic? There is nothing more authentic than this. Jesus is offering you his real life in exchange for that shame, in exchange for that guilt. How amazing is that? And all you have to do is say, yeah, I am a bad person and I want your life. And Jesus will. No fear. You don't need to fear. That's what he's trying to say here. You don't need to fear. He will and he can give you life. So is that it? Is that the end of the story? No, there's more to it, right? Because again, Jesus didn't come just to say, hey, be perfect and then leave. You know, too often we as Christians think that the cross is only one point in our life. Hey, we didn't believe in God, now we believe in God, hallelujah, hallelujah. No. Every day, even as we need to go to the cross. Every day we need to say, I'm a sinner, I'm bad. Look what it says here in verse 14. And he charged him to tell no one, but to go show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing as Moses commanded. I'd love to get into the nitty-gritty details. We don't have time today. I'd love to get into that. But basically, this was the law so that he could show and he could come back into community. He was show, when he says here, as Moses commanded, look at the last bit, for a proof to them, because this is what I really want to focus. He tells them to go to the priest for a proof to them. Yes, in one sense, it's to prove that the leprosy is gone, so he could come back. But on a greater sense, it was to prove that Jesus is alive. Jesus is saving people. Jesus saved me. God is at work in Jesus. That was the proof to them. God is at work in Jesus. And what Jesus is asking us is that we too live our lives in a way that God is at work in Jesus saving us. We point people to Jesus. Christians here, we don't go to the cross and then get this healing, cleansing, real life and then come over here and then pretend we're perfect again. It's silly. It's rude. It takes away all the glory of the cross. And it makes people believe that lie, that you need to be perfect. No, every day we go to God and say, please, I'm a sinner. And then, just imagine what effect that would have in our life. And I end with this. Can you imagine what 6 p.m. would look like? Right here. If every day we knew we were sinners. We knew that God loved us. If every day we knew we were bad people, if it wasn't for Jesus, can you imagine what would happen when people came in? We wouldn't judge them. Can you imagine what our growth groups would feel like when we were openly expressing, hey, I'm struggling with this. Can you imagine the prayer? Can you imagine the healing? Can you imagine the impact that would have on your life? Can you imagine what would happen when we sang here? No longer would be like, why am I singing? We'd be singing because God gave us real life, because he loved us. Can you imagine? Now, when people walk in, you're right. They wouldn't see perfect Christians or Christians pretending to be perfect. They would see that God loved them. Stop trying to be perfect. Stop pretending to be perfect. God knows who you are. He knows what you've done. And he still chooses to love you. Go to him. Be washed by his love.